It's 6 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Michael Brown reporting. The United Nations Security Council unanimously voted Wednesday to impose a new round of targeted economic sanctions against North Korea for its September 9th nuclear test. Hear now from UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon.
The Security Council has today taken a strong action on one of the most enduring and pressing peace and security challenges of our time. The nuclear and ballistic missile activities of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea.
The sanctions could cost North Korea more than $800 million a year in lost revenue to use to finance its nuclear and ballistic missile programs. United Nations Humanitarian Chief Stephen O'Brien is urging countries with influence to do everything within their power to protect civilians in eastern Aleppo. O'Brien addressed an emergency Security Council meeting on Wednesday.
For the sake of humanity, we call on, we plead with the parties and those with influence to do everything in their power to protect civilians and enable access to the besieged part of eastern Aleppo before it becomes one giant graveyard.
O'Brien said up to 25,000 people have been displaced from rebel-held districts in eastern Aleppo since Saturday. A draft resolution in the United Nations Security Council is calling for a 10-day truce in Aleppo and for the cessation of hostilities. Colombia's Congress on Wednesday approved a peace deal between the government and the rebel group known as FARC to end more than 50 years of war. Peace negotiations have stretched on for 4 years in an effort to end the conflict that has killed more than 220,000 people and displaced millions. From here in Washington, this is VOA News. The U.S. President-elect Donald Trump says he is completely removing himself from his global business empire to avoid conflicts of interest with running the country when he assumes power January 20th. Trump's business entities span from the United States and 18 other countries. Trump is not required by U.S. law to divest his holdings, but he said that he feels it is visually important as president to in no way have a conflict of interest with my various business entities. Meantime, Trump's transition team said Wednesday that Treasury nominee Steven Mnuchin and Commerce nominee Wilbur Ross will be instrumental in implementing the president-elect's America First economic plan. Mnuchin spoke to reporters.
I couldn't be more honored to serve the president-elect. I've had the opportunity to work with him through the campaign. I couldn't be more excited about the opportunity to work with him in the administration.
The firm United Technologies said Wednesday that it will keep 1,000 jobs in the United States rather than move them to Mexico. The company said it got a promise from President-elect Trump to improve the nation's business climate as well as incentives from the state of Indiana. The UN High Commissioner on Wednesday gave an informal briefing to the UN Human Rights Council in Geneva. Lisa Schlein has our report.
High Commissioner for Human Rights Zayd Raad al-Hussein singled out an agreement between the government of Colombia and the FARC rebel group as a bright spot in an otherwise troubling human rights picture. He says he is particularly concerned about the worsening situation in the northern Syrian city of East Aleppo. The High Commissioner warns the erosion of international institutions and laws is threatening global instability and leading to a rise of xenophobia and intolerance in many states. Lisa Schlein, Geneva.
Dozens of protesters gathered outside police headquarters in Charlotte, North Carolina, in the U.S. on Wednesday night after a prosecutor, announced no charges would be filed against the officer who shot and killed a black man in September. The demonstration was peaceful, a contrast to the 2 days of riots following Keith Lamont Scott's death. Some of Wednesday's protesters used the rally to highlight concerns about the use of force by police, particularly against minorities. And December 1st marks World AIDS Day. For the past 3 decades, activists around the world put a spotlight on the AIDS virus on this day, encouraging testing, information on how it spreads, and how to keep from getting it. And now scientists are talking about vaccines and cures. A large-scale trial of a potential vaccine is now underway in South Africa. I'm Michael Brown, reporting in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Thursday, the first day of December, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Gambians are voting today in presidential election.
I can clearly and confidently tell you that communication, international lines have been interrupted. Internet have been interrupted. It is very difficult for the opposition here to communicate with their polling agents countrywide to know what is happening.
Sehu Umbalo is one of the diaspora coordinators for the Gambia Democratic Congress Party. The State Department calls on the Gambian government to free a U.S. citizen arrested in the country. Today is a special voting day in Ghana ahead of that country's December 7th presidential election. And the UN is warning of mass demonstrations in the Democratic Republic of Congo if President Kabila does not leave power by December 19.
A ban on all public demonstrations by opposition parties or civil society is now in effect throughout most of the country. But this doesn't seem to apply to the ruling majority, whose gatherings continue to take place.
Andrew Gilmer is the UN Assistant Secretary General for Human Rights. Zimbabwe police used tear gas yesterday to disperse protesters against the country's new currency. Africans take to the stage in South Africa to commemorate World AIDS Day today, Thursday. And vintage planes cross Africa in pursuit of wildlife conservation. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Gambians are voting today in presidential election where incumbent Yahya Jammeh, in power since 1994 and criticized for widespread human rights violations, is running for a fifth consecutive term. He's being challenged by Adama Barrow, candidate for a coalition of seven political parties, and independent candidate Mama Kande of the Gambia Democratic Congress Party. Gambians in the diaspora say the government has imposed a media blackout as of Thursday, November 30th, yesterday, and they say they are unable to contact their individual candidates and polling agents. They are accusing President Jammeh of stealing the elections before they are held. Joining us now from New York City is Sehu Umbalo, one of the diaspora coordinators for the Gambia Democratic Congress Party. Good morning, Mr. Umbalo.
Good morning, Mr. James.
Thank you very much for joining us on Daybreak Africa. Gambians are voting today. What can you tell us?
James, all I can tell you is today Gambians are voting for a president who will be in charge of the country for the next 5 years. However, the elections has already been rigged by the incumbent president, Jammeh. I can clearly and confidently tell you that communication, international lines have been interrupted. Internet have been interrupted. It is very difficult for the oppositions here to communicate with their polling agents countrywide to know what is happening. And from last night, soldiers have been in the rampage, attacking opposition party supporters, beating them up. The party in concern that was severely affected was the Gambia Democratic Congress Party.
There are different means of social media that you can get through to the Gambia by telephone, by internet, by WhatsApp, by other means. Are you saying all these channels have been closed down?
That is correct, Mr. James. As we are speaking right now, we cannot reach each other. All international lines have been interrupted. The internet, WhatsApp is not working. Viber used to work for Gambians. It has not been working. It has been interrupted. People are trying, even from Senegal, to try and communicate with their loved ones inside the Gambia to see what is happening, which has proved futile. And also the borders have been closed as we are speaking right now. Borders between Gambia and Senegal are completely been closed.
Now, you mentioned your candidate. There is a coalition. Adama Barrow is the candidate of the coalition of seven political parties. Candidate did not join that coalition. People are saying if Yahya Jammeh wins, then your candidate probably contributed to that by not joining the coalition and everybody going against Yahya Jammeh.
Mr. James Bottom, that information is not correct. My candidate is an independent candidate like any opposition candidate. He registered his political party and he is contesting like any other opposition party that is contesting in the country. What happened was at the time of the formation of this coalition, they went on negotiations. And during the negotiations, at the end of the negotiations, they couldn't agree on how a flag bearer can be selected. Most of the other parties agreed and they select a front runner through delegates, like every party should select some delegates and then they select front runner through those delegates. And then the Gambia Democratic Party, which I belong to, suggested that they believe in a nationwide selection. They should go on a primary throughout the country whereby whoever is selected is being selected by the Gambian people. That is how the disagreement came between the parties. And then he decided to go and contest. He said, whatever comes, he is going to contest against President Jammeh. President Jammeh has to be defeated, and he believes he has the support.
So now tell me, do you think the election itself today will be free and fair?
Mr. James Wood, as we are talking right now, the election has been rigged. The election is neither free nor fair, because already there is an atmosphere of intimidation by the military. The military is going all over, arresting civilians, beating up civilians from last night. So therefore, this election cannot be regarded as free and fair. It is completely a sham election. The European Union were denied of coming into the country to observe the elections. Likewise, the ECOWAS are not coming into the country to observe these elections. It's only local observers who are totally under intimidation and supervision by the government. So therefore, the election is not free and that is not fair.
It's very nice to talk with you, and thank you for joining us this morning on Daybreak Africa.
You're welcome, James. Thank you.
That was Sehu Mbalo, one of the diaspora coordinators for the opposition Gambia Democratic Congress Party. He was speaking with me from New York City. The State Department has called on the Gambian government to free Fanta Dabo Jawara, a U.S. citizen from the state of Maryland who has been arrested in the country. Here is State Department Deputy Spokesperson Mark Tuna.
We were able to provide her with consular assistance. We were able to attend her court hearings. And I think on November 21st, a consular officer met with her at her most recent hearing. We're monitoring the case. We are concerned about due process, as we are in any case abroad. We've made those concerns clear to the Gambian government.
Our State Department Deputy Spokesperson Mark Tuna speaking Wednesday during the regular daily State Department briefing. Today is a special voting day in Ghana ahead of that country's December 7th presidential election. Those voting today include the media, who will be covering the poll, election officials, and the security. Eric Zapasu, spokesman for the Ghana Electoral Commission, tells viewers Peter Clotty, who is on assignment to cover the Ghana election, that while the preparation had been tedious at times, his commission is ready for the poll.
Oh, it's been a very busy, tight, time-bound, action-packed activities with a series of election disputes and disagreements, and we've gone to court over a lot of them. The good news is that in all these processes, we have resorted to the legitimate legal means of resolving the processes. So I would say with a few days to the election, the electoral environment has been fully sanitized. And the latest issue that came up, we met at the IPAC and we've been able to trash them out amicably to the satisfaction of the stakeholders. In fact, most of them bordered on the figures on the voters' roll and then the supplementary voters' list, such as the proxy, the special voting list, the transferred voting list. And then we also looked at some thorny issues as what amounts to overvoting. And the event of having overvoting at the polling station, the mechanisms for resolution. So we'll say that most of these issues have been thrashed out. We can say confidently that the registers are ready, the figures have been exact now, and everybody is in the full mood of what number of voters we are expecting throughout the election.
Were the political parties satisfied at the inter-party advisory committee meeting you held with them? Because usually they come out and throw out allegations against the EC and all that. These issues they brought up, were they satisfied when you carefully explained them?
Yeah, they were sufficiently addressed, and the mood of the meeting will tell you that everybody was comfortable.
Talking about special voting, December 1st is special voting day. What are the preparations towards that? Because I heard some of them saying that there are some names that were added and they were not satisfied with despite the meeting. They came out in public saying that it seems the EC is doing something they didn't like and they took an issue with
it. Yeah, they brought it up. Yeah, the issue of the special voters list. You know, when you look at our rules and regulations, you're supposed to have the special voting at least 1 week before the main election.
Right.
So if the main election is on the 7th of December, then we are talking about the 1st of December, latest for the special voting.
Right.
And the special voting, per the regulations, gives the opportunity to the media who will be covering the election, election officials who will be engaged on election day, and then the security.
Right.
Okay, who will be ensuring the security of the election. These are three categories of stakeholders who must be free on election day to deliver. Mm-hmm. So the rules make provision for them to vote earlier so that on election day they will be available to perform their duties.
Eric Zakpasu is the spokesman for the Electoral Commission of Ghana. He was speaking with viewers Peter Clotte, who is on assignment to cover next week's Ghana presidential election. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botte in Washington. Today is Thursday, the first day of December. Daybreak Africa time, 16 minutes past the hour. Police in Zimbabwe used water cannons and tear gas on Wednesday to disperse demonstrators protesting against the country's new currency. The government says the bond notes are aimed at easing cash shortage, but economists have warned that the bond notes will quickly lose value and unleash hyperinflation. Sebastian Mofu has more for VOA from Harare.
These are demonstrators, most of them young, protesting against the introduction of bond notes this week by President Robert Mugabe's government. The protesters chant songs denouncing the new currency, which they say will worsen the country's economic problems. The demonstrators scattered when police targeted them with water cannons and tear gas. Police refused to comment, but activists Maureen Kademaunga believes the use of force will not silence Zimbabweans.
The economy is not going to change because people have been clamped down or have been harassed. The political strategy of ZANU-PF is not going to change. And so it means that at some point again, people will still start to say, enough is enough. We are sick and tired of being sick and tired. So we'll go back to the July era where Ivan was leading as the voice of discontent.
Ivan Mawarire led a series of protests in July before he fled Zimbabwe, fearing for his life. He had been protesting the government's failure to respect human rights and its efforts to prop up the country's ailing economy. After he fled Zimbabwe, a few more protests were held before the police imposed a ban on demonstrations in September. Wednesday's demonstration was the first since then, as police kept extending the protest ban. The protesters want Zimbabwe to continue relying on foreign currencies, mainly the US dollar and South African rand, which has been the case since 2009 when the Southern African country abandoned its own worthless money. The government says the new bond notes, which are officially equal to the US dollar, will ease a chronic shortage of hard cash. But economists have warned that the bond notes are not backed by any government reserves and are likely to lose value and plunge Zimbabwe back into the hyperinflation it experienced in 2008. Inflation at the time reached an annual rate of more than 200 million% before the government stopped counting. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
A senior United Nations official warns that the suppression of basic rights in the Democratic Republic of Congo will worsen tensions and lead to more violence and insecurity. UN Assistant Secretary General for Human Rights, Andrew Gilman, has reported to the UN Human Rights Council in Geneva on his recent fact-finding mission to the country. Lisa Schlein reports.
Joseph Kabila's second and last term as president of Democratic Republic of Congo comes to an end on December 19th. A court has ruled that he could stay in power if elections were not held in November to determine his successor. UN Assistant Secretary General for Human Rights Andrew Gilmore says during his visit last week to DRC, he witnessed profound and widespread concern there may be mass demonstrations in many parts of the country if Kabila does not relinquish power.
These may be met in a similar fashion to those in September.
in which case we could see a truly terrible escalation. So this is why confidence-building measures need to be implemented now to head off that scenario.
Dozens of people were killed during 2 days of riots in the capital, Kinshasa, in mid-September. Gilmore says he is deeply concerned by the clampdown on fundamental freedoms by the authorities.
A ban on all public demonstrations by opposition parties or civil society is now in effect throughout most of the country. But this doesn't seem to apply to the ruling majority, whose gatherings continue to take place. During my visit to the country, I underlined to the Congolese authorities that there can be no credible and peaceful electoral process without respect for fundamental freedoms.
Gilmore says restrictions on the media have increased. He says at least 7 journalists have been arrested, 2 newspapers closed, and 1 radio station discontinued since September. He says various DRC authorities delegitimize and denigrate civil society organizations, branding them and dismissing the demonstrators against the government as thugs, rapists, and drug addicts. He says he rejected their assertion the United Nations is in the pocket of the opposition. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
AVAC, a global advocacy organization working to prevent the spread of HIV, the virus that causes AIDS, has sponsored a unique event in Johannesburg, South Africa, to commemorate World AIDS Day today, Thursday. AVAC has partnered with The Moth, a New York-based group specializing in the art of storytelling, to help Africans with personal experiences with HIV to tell their stories in public. The idea is to help them overcome their previously hidden trauma and to inspire others to join the fight against HIV. Darren Taylor reports from South Africa.
Hundreds of people chatter inside the Market Theatre in Johannesburg. They're silent when a slender, long-haired woman in a peach dress appears on stage. Mary Valai from Kenya is here to share a story in public for the first time. In 2002, after a long illness, she had blood tests. Afterwards, she met a doctor who initially laid her fears to rest.
Mary, you don't have hepatitis. You don't have cancer. But you are HIV positive. I am dumbfounded. If somebody had plunged a dagger into my heart, I would not have felt pain as excruciating as the pain that I was feeling right at this moment.
Valai considers HIV infection to be a death sentence.
My doctor, I screamed at him silently, "You have metamorphosed into my judge, my jury, and my executioner." A curtain of rage comes over my eyes. I want to strangle him.
In the early 2000s, AIDS killed millions of Africans. Few had access to life-prolonging antiretroviral or ARV medicines. As still happens today, HIV-positive people are shunned, even by family and friends. Valai fears the same fate.
The next 7 months are the longest months that I have ever lived through. The days are long. They are grey. I feel hopeless and useless. I even attempt suicide, and I become a former shadow of myself.
Valai feels that before she dies, she must tell her parents she's infected. She expects them to reject her, but she's shocked by their reaction.
We will love you, and we will encourage you with all that we have.
Valai knows it's the ARVs she now takes that fight potentially fatal opportunistic sicknesses and keep her alive. But she tells the crowd it's her parents' words and support that ultimately saved her life.
Ladies and gentlemen, isn't it amazing how the power of love can lift you from one level to another? Thank you.
Yatiana Boswane begins his address by telling about the first time he sees someone with HIV on television as a child in Lesotho.
I saw a dark, tall, skinned man in a dirty hospital, and he was grinding his teeth. I said to myself, HIV-positive people are not people, and they need to be kept away from the society.
Years later, he becomes an HIV peer educator, trying to prevent the spread of the virus in a country with the second highest HIV prevalence in the world. Yet, his discrimination against infected people continues.
I could not share food with a HIV-positive person. I told myself that I cannot kiss a HIV-positive person.
Then, a few years ago, his best friend calls him to say, I'm HIV-positive.
As if I was watching a horror movie, my mind took me back to the days when I was partying with him day and night. To the days when we would sleep on the same bed and share alcohol and share sex partners. And I said to myself, there's no doubt I'm also HIV positive.
The next day, the two friends meet.
He grabbed my hand and greeted me. I was shocked, but I could feel the same touch. He was still my friend. I couldn't feel the HIV virus. I could feel that he's still a human being, just like me.
Moswane's friend inspired him to finally get tested for HIV. His result was negative. He was overjoyed, but says all he thinks of is the infected people he's mistreated when he was supposed to have been protecting them. Moswane became involved in projects in Lesotho to prevent discrimination against HIV-positive individuals.
It's not HIV-AIDS that kills. It's stress and stigma. Stigma is in our hearts, and it's for us to make it live or to kill it. Thank you.
AVAC Director Mitchell Warren says groups trying to prevent HIV often underestimate the power of personal stories as tools against the virus.
I think the great successes in the AIDS response in Africa and around the world have been when we took a step back and shut up as experts and listened.
He says everyone's playing a role in the spread of HIV, for better or for worse, even if they don't realize it. And the more people get talking about that, the stronger the world's response will be to the virus, and the nearer it will be to the defeat of AIDS. Darren Taylor for VOA News, Johannesburg.
A vintage airplane rally aiming to fly to 10 African countries stopped in Kenya this past Sunday on its way to Southern Africa. The event is raising funds for UNICEF, BirdLife International to promote wildlife conservation, and the reforestation group Seed Bombing. But the pilots of the 20 old biplanes have had a bit of trouble on their trip. Before reaching Kenya, they were detained for 2 days in Ethiopia because of paperwork problems. Mohammed Yusuf has more from Nairobi.
They're on a mission in the air and on the ground. It is a mission to raise money and awareness for wildlife conservation in Africa. Adam Morant is one of the 20 pilots who landed in Kenya's national park.
I'm very privileged and happy that I can be that, and hopefully we'll have more of those kind of events that we can make sure that it's aware for the wildlife and the parks and good support for them.
One rally sponsor is BirdLife International, which is hoping to create awareness of the decline of vultures in Africa. The vintage air rally began 2 weeks ago in the Greek island Crete. After landing in Ethiopia, where the 40 crew members were detained for 2 days for allegedly entering its airspace illegally, the rally team made it to Kenya, where aviation fans turned out. Organizers of the local event say the historic biplanes from the first half of the 20th century created a lot of buzz and gave a lift to Kenya's tourism.
We were trying to create an opportunity to showcase Kenya's tourism, and to do that you can see the crowds that have turned up. What this will take is take the story to the world. We want Kenya to be seen as a star destination. We want people to come to Kenya.
The crew has already covered 5 countries, 5 to go. The trip ends in Cape Town on December 17th. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
That's it for this Thursday, December 1st edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing everybody a very good Thursday.
Need a little straight talk? Want to make sense of the world around you? Ask a question. Hear what others have to say? If so, Voice of America has a variety of talk shows for you. Lifestyle, health, politics, youth, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, TV, or the internet. They examine a wide variety of issues and world events, not always covered by other media. VOA.